Your call, Mr. Chair.
Yes, promptness. There we are. Hi.
No, up is.
Negative.
Well, good morning, councilors, and welcome to our 1 April County Manager meeting, 5 minutes after 10. About a year ago, or precisely a year ago, the county began to self-insure itself for medical care, and I think dental as well, and vision. We're here this morning to present results to date, report on the financial health of our self-insurance fund and that sort of thing, what our experiences have been with health care. And before our HR folks, Francine Rice and Kathy Myers, start, I'd just like to commend them for the fine work that they've done in this area. Significant amount of work, a lot of interaction with the state and with our healthcare partners and so on. So very impressive. So with that, Francine, I guess you.
Talk right into the microphone for the citizens to hear you.
Okay. Morning, councilors. I'm. Okay. Good morning, councilors. I'm Kathy Myers from HR. I prepared a handout for you, and I'm going to just talk high level and point to some of the slides that I have attached for you. But in April 1, 2014, we implemented the self-insured program, which included the Regents PPO plan and the Delta Dental of Washington plan. And with the implementation of the plan, we projected a savings that's being that's coming from an elimination of a couple of taxes. One is a state tax, and one is a federal tax that we would have had to pay. As well as a reduction in the administrative cost that we were paying to the carriers. So, as my outline shows, we've saved a 2% premium tax for the state and a 2.3% tax to the federal government. Overall, that resulted in about $1 million savings. We are using that savings to fund the reserves. We have required reserves that the state stipulates in terms of government agencies who choose to self-fund their plans. So we're on track for funding our reserves. Everything is going very well with the plan. It's running smoothly. Our partnership with the carriers is going well, and employees seem to be really happy with it.
You have to take that reserve to. How long will it take us to have that reserve built up?
Well, we're on track to have it fully funded by the end of 2015. So it is an actuarially, it's a figure that's established by insurance actuaries that they then determine what our liability is based on our claims cost. So it will be adjusted yearly based on how our claims are running. So it's not going to be a static amount through the life of the program. So some key points I do want to bring to your attention is, again, the plan's running fine. Even though it's running fine financially, we have had higher than expected claims cost than what we originally projected based on our historical data. So we are watching how our claims are running. And again, the reserve requirement is on track. So I've given you an illustration of what our 2015 reserve requirements are. The first line there is IBNP, and that means incurred but not paid. And that's a reserve that has to be maintained in the event that the plan's terminated. We have to be able to cover the cost of claims that, through a run-out period. And then the contingency is set aside in case our claims do end up running higher than what we expected and we're not able to cover the cost of those claims through our normal budget line item. So we have some extra money there to cover that cost.
A couple of points. It's surprising to me to see that we actually have $1 million of real savings right out right at the very beginning, just simply because of the 2 plus the 2.3% taxes that we no longer pay to the state. That's very...
That is good news, and that's really what some of the drivers were in doing this. The 2% was an existing tax at the time. The 2.3% was a new tax that we would have incurred had we not made this change.
That's annual, plus the $441,000. So it really does add up to $1 million savings annually, right?
As long as we stay self-insured, we won't have those taxes. That's correct.
Significant. You indicated you have $175,000 here that you have in parentheses for a stop loss point. Is that our stop loss point, or is that the amount of extra claims that we have incurred?
That's our stop loss point. So once a claim exceeds $175,000, then that excess claims cost goes to the reinsurance company. So we're only on the we're only liable for the first $175,000.
So how much have we, the 15% versus this, I mean, that's a significant increase over the industry norm of 8 to 9%. What does that translate to in the dollars?
Well, into dollars, right now it means a 15%. So
of what? How much?
A 15% increase over what we paid in 14.
I think at the beginning, if I'm remembering correctly, when you presented this for approval, you indicated that we had a number of good years back to back, and that we are due for a bad year, and we're seeing a little bit of that bad year.
That's
and
correct.
We did in some large claims for 14, and we also have seen some initial stages of large claims for 15 as well. And Bob has a number. Okay.
That's 1.8 million extra claims. So what will you, what above what would be the, or that's the
today.
Total amount.
Right.
Yeah. The question is, compared to us being self-insured now, or us being self-insured now compared to what we were before, that extra claims amount, is that something that we're bearing now that we would not have borne then? So that's common to both.
No, that 15% increase, if that's what it ends up being, that would be roughly the increase we would have under either scenario, because it's driven by our own utilization. Kind of dropped our baseline down by avoiding those taxes, but any increase in cost due to our claims and our utilization would be under either scenario.
Common to both. So it's not like
right.
We're getting zinged because of
it. Right. If we had not self-insured, these claims would still have existed and would have cost the same amount of money.
Stop loss for the amount above the $175,000, yes. We pay insurance for that.
Profit and loss of the program,
and that's likely to go up because we've had a lot of large claims, and we'll show you that. But yes, we do pay for that insurance, and that's likely to increase because of our large claims.
We have the ability to put more in, and raise that $35,000 stop loss point. We could raise that up to $200,000 or $300,000, and then that would make our insurance less.
Yes, and we do look at the pros and cons of doing that.
I reserve.
Our cost would...
Where you have this cost benefit of more insurance or less insurance. And this is where they recommend that we are acting. That's where the actuaries are going to be.
But it's not just a product of reserve, though, Commissioner. What we'd essentially have to do is raise our rates to ourselves to increase the flow of cash into the fund. So, in other words, we'd be raising our insurance rates to ourselves. It's not just a function of reserve. So when you have, if you're going to change the stop-loss standard and increase those costs, we're putting that fund on the hook for more cash flow issues. And by that I mean if we're paying out $300,000 claims now instead of just $175,000, we have to have the cash in the fund, not a reserve. A reserve sits there for a really truly extraordinary circumstance. If we raise our deductible, that's not an extraordinary circumstance. That's a planned business practice, and we would have to account for that in the rates we charge departments for the insurance.
I thought we had that all covered. I'm probably using the wrong term. Is it called a reserve account that we build up to pay all of our bills?
No, I budget for claims separate from the reserves. So it's based on what we predict our claims cost to be. Mm-hmm. So as Bob was saying, we would have to budget to a higher level, which then would directly impact our rates.
You can think of the reserve as fund balance. In the same way we treat fund balance, it's not part of the budget.
Where I'm going with this is that once you build that reserve up for that catastrophic cost, why wouldn't we leave that at that higher amount? But you said earlier it'd be a fluctuating accordingly. If we could get that reserve there and leave it there, like our own policy, then our cost wouldn't necessarily continue to go up because it would have already put in place a reserve.
We do keep the reserves that are set. Those are put aside in a separate account and are there either for if we ever terminate the plan, so we can't touch those. So then we have, like, operating reserves, and those are set, and the state tells us that we do it actuarially. So we need to review it every year actuarially. It's not going to change a whole lot. And that's also money, as Bob was saying, that really isn't intended to be used for our operating expenses. We budget each month for what we think our claims are going to be, and we have that chooses our revenue comes in each month, and we pay claims out each month. So that's the ongoing monthly activity. And we'll show you that. We have a picture of that might help.
Those costs would make our premiums plus.
That's right. True. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A question about...
You're good. You're good.
Okay. So we have employee premium copays. Is that the right term, copay? We participate.
Payroll deduction part, yes. Or that yes. The doctor's office?
Yeah, copay is what you pay when you receive treatment.
Payroll deduction, employee contribution. Uh-huh.
So if we are experiencing a higher than normal or higher than average usage now, and we're into this about 3 months, at what point would the employee premium sharing amount need to be adjusted? What's the time frame?
Change the rates annually, effective January 1st of each year. So when we go through open enrollment prior to that time. So around in the fall, we set the rates for the following year. And then those additional costs, there's an employee portion and a county portion. So this 15% is not all borne by the county. There is an employee portion to that increase.
And employees contribute about 7% of the total?
Okay, so if this trend continued, so we would only make that cost to the employee, we would alter that annually. Is it based on what? The prior year experience? In general,
we use an underwriter at Mercer to do the rate setting. So they calculate what the rates should be, and then once we have those figures, then we would calculate what the employee contribution would be based on the rates.
The rates are driven by our utilization, so our claims from the previous several months or years, and then an anticipated trend for the rest of the year.
Understood. And then if you could explain, so we're self-insured to a certain point. for catastrophic illness, do we have an umbrella or a master plan that kicks in if one of our employees has a catastrophic? And what are the parameters of that plan?
Yes, we do. We have what's called stop-loss coverage. And so our the point at which a claim would then go to this reinsurance company, the stop-loss is $175,000 on an individual.
That's an individual. Okay, that makes a difference. I was thinking that meant collectively, which seemed like a low number, but that is per covered person or per plan?
Per covered person per year. Mm-hmm. There is another level of protection under our reinsurance policy, and that's set at 125% of claims, of expected claims. So if our total claims cost that we're paying exceeds 125% of what we expected, then the reinsurance company would come back in and cover those claims also. So we do
stop
have
loss
protection.
On the individual level, and stop loss on the individual level as well as on the aggregate for the whole county.
What's the aggregate amount?
125% of expected claims.
And what do you call that last part?
The
aggregate
stop loss.
So there's an individual and an aggregate stop loss. Okay. If we were not self-insured, would we still pay for those two premiums?
It would be included as part of the rate that the insurance company would charge us, yes, because they reinsure also to protect.
So whether it's self-insured or not, those are common ingredients
yes.
to both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Let me take you to slide or page 3. So that'll give you a visual of how the plan's been running from both a revenue and an expense standpoint, and more particularly how our claims have been running. So you can see, you know, revenue is pretty static because it's based on enrollment. But the claims, you can see where they're kind of bouncing all over. So if you look in July, claims jumped clear up to almost $1.2 million. And then in August came down to about $900,000. Our projected claims over the course of the whole plan year through December 31 for this 2014 period was about $787,000. So that's what we predicted our claims to be, and that's what was factored into setting the rate. So you can see how claims are unpredictable. So we had several large claims in July. Again, in the fall, we had another month, October, with some high claims. December was high again. I know March is going to also be high. It's not included here because I don't have all my final numbers for March, but I believe it's going to be over $1 million again. So,
is it typical each year, even if these are much higher usage than we'd normally see, are there months of the year that typically are always higher?
Well,
or is it just totally unpredictable?
It really varies. I mean, sometimes in the summer you'll see a lull, but I think some of it's a result of our population, and also a result of people retiring, maybe. We're seeing a lot more hip and knee surgeries, knee replacement surgeries, but I've also seen quite a few other very serious health issues going on.
Yeah, this is really the first time we have this level of detail for the claims to look at, so we will study that over the years to see if there's a trend, and so we can better understand what's going on.
I love trend graphs where you have multiple years reflecting the history of expenses in this case. I am curious if we have a total expense amount that includes everything that has to do with anything related to the cost of medical insurance, dental insurance, over time, that would go back, let's say, 10 years or so, that would help us to know whether we're self-insured or whether we were conventional,
What is that cost? Do we have
do have claims data going back. With Regents, we can go back to 2010 because that's when the contract started.
Well, claims is one component of that. I'm thinking lump it all in there.
We have our total.
All of everything together.
Our total cost,
medical
yes.
costs
mm-hmm.
To us.
Yes, we have that data.
And can you include that? Can you follow up with that so that we can see that total, everything included, cost versus time as a trend, at least going back 10 years, that would bring us up to current?
Just as a reminder, we also have the Kaiser medical plan that we're not talking about here today, and the Kaiser dental plan. So this is just the Regents and dental, the Delta Dental. Are you interested in seeing the full picture of all of it?
If you think there's more, in addition to the big picture, which I think would be very useful.
Okay.
Also to break it out the way you think would be appropriate
okay.
for us to be able to
comprehend. I want to make sure. Okay.
Big picture of the, especially that helps us to contrast the before and the after of self-insurance.
I think it would be helpful to have totals, but then it would be interesting to me to contrast the rate of growth and cost on the Kaiser side versus this.
I could just add one more thing. Because of the fluctuation in the number of employees, it really makes a difference. I mean, if you look at the number of employees we had in the
2008.
Prior to 2008, you might not see any difference. So I would suggest that maybe we need to look at it on a basis per employee.
We could. That would be an additional. But being that we've had, we have far fewer employees now than we did back at our peak, I would like to be able to have that as additional. Because I hate to separate out and kind of...
Yeah, totals and
things.
Per capita, I think we should have both.
Yeah. With and without
per
capita.
Per employee per month, we have that.
Yeah. And a question about that. We have staff, we perhaps have staff that works on this full-time. Are you thinking about our staff costs being included?
Well, that would be part of the overall total cost.
We did retain a half of a full-time, a half of a person in order to help us administer this plan. So that... It's a hidden cost.
That'll be in there, too.
I'm afraid that we've been stealing a little bit of your thunder here, because really the bulk of what this is a significant savings that we start right out the gate annually, $1 million just simply of not having to pay for what we used to have to pay for before. And we've been kind of concentrated on the extra utilization to meet the needs of that... kind of contaminates this a little bit. But in any case, that we have to cover our employees. We cover our employees however we insure. So I just want to make sure we don't take away from the success of this and the savings that this has realized. And so I want to really appreciate that. And I do look forward to seeing the overall costs over time as well. I just love those trends.
A couple more points. We are self-insured, I believe, for state industrial accidents. And this chart reflects that inclusive.
That's a separate fund and a separate insurance and separate. It's not included in here.
This is also only Premera.
Regency.
Right, Regents and Delta Dental. Right. Right. We have that, and we'll do that.
Going to self-insurance also had some, we didn't go backwards when it comes to the choices offered to our employees. In fact, we went forward. They have a little
offered
bit more
the exact
flexibility.
Same benefits and the same providers
par.
So far.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the main reason for us going to the self-insurance route is the expected annual savings. Great.
Dental. So page 4 is the same illustration, but it just reflects dental claims. So you can see dental claims are pretty level. There can be a few blips, around. I think this blip here in November to December could tie into retirements. I usually see more of a jump in the summer months where parents are taking their kids to the dentist. But generally, it's pretty level there.
So, Kathy, what accounts for the change from month to month in revenues?
Employee turnover.
vacancy rate.
And these revenues show the balance at that time. So as we're using some of the balance to pay claims, you see a little bit more fluctuation. Because these are showing the account balance on a month-to-month. Oh.
No, this is
revenue.
Revenue.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, one of the differences between the medical, more level on the revenue side than the dental, when we have turnover, a new employee coming in will have basically immediate medical coverage, but there's a three-month waiting period for the dental coverage. So if someone leaves, it's going to be 3 to 4 months before we are adding a new person to the plan.
Also include in our trend graph the number of employees that are covered over time and the total number of covered individuals, because there's families that each one of those employees may have multiple people covered in that. So I'd like to be able to see that as well. Great, thank you.
So going into 15, it just as we did our renewal for 15, the governing board, based on the information that was provided from the underwriter, there was a recommendation of increasing the rate at 6.5% for the region's plan, and then no increase on the dental plan, and that's where the governing board settled for this year. So we do work with an underwriter who has quite a bit of experience in the underwriting area, worked at Regents, was one of their underwriters. So we have a lot of confidence in the information and the numbers that are provided. Going into page 2, talking again a little bit more about increase in utilization, we've talked about large claims. So I have some information about large claims. So if you want to go to page 7 and 8, one of the interesting points about page 6 is it's showing you on a year-over-year basis how our large claims costs have grown. So in 2012, you can see where we had just a 3% increase over 2011, but going into 13 over 2012, it jumped to 33%. And then 14 had a big jump to 52%. So you can see where we're having more large claims coming through. We had a total of 31 large claims to the tune of about $3.3 million. One of our major categories that we continually see year over year is musculoskeletal disorders. So that's joints, could be broken bones, back problems, things like that. Cancer, we do have a fair amount of cancer, unfortunately. Symptoms. That's the diagnostic processes they go through to try to define what's wrong with somebody. So we tend to see a lot in that category also. And then we have a similar handout for the dental. So on page, if you go to page 10, it's just a graph. Kind of give you an illustration of how our claims are running on the dental side.
Question for you. On that page 6 and under the 2013 column, underneath that table, you say $1 million removed. What is that? At the very bottom.
Page 6?
Mm-hmm.
That that was $1 million that went to reinsurance. So this went over the stop loss.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Ten?
Yeah, and then 10 is an illustration of how basically claims are running. We do great in the cleaning and preventive area. We've had an uptick in the specialty restorative. So, but again, this is not a high-cost program. So even if we do see an uptick, it doesn't mean significant dollars. Where on the medical side, if we see an uptick, that does mean significant dollars. So looking forward, we are anticipating, back on page two, we are anticipating a double-digit rate increase. Medical side, so it could be, you know, right around 15%, just depending on how claims continue to trend through the year. We are also anticipating a slight increase on the dental side, so our costs will be going up. The employees' costs will go up, the county's cost will go up also.
This is the kind of information and the detail. This is just an excerpt of some of the detail that the healthcare committee looks at when they look at trying to keep the cost within the budget. So they look at the utilization, they look at how the plan is designed, and that's what they do to keep it within their budget requirements. So they're very familiar with this information as well.
So 15% of what? What is the total cost?
$12 million a year.
About $1 million a month.
So it's okay. About
$1.8 million.
The 15% increase of $12.8 million means that the county would end up, because we bear 93% of the costs.
Under the current arrangement with most of the unions, it would be a 50% cost sharing. The employee, 50-50.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that would... So 15% of 50% of the $12.8 million is still a pretty sizable hit, because this comes out of the general fund mainly?
No, it comes from all funds. Any fund that has an employee is paying into medical.
It's divided up by department.
And really, it's a matter of perspective, Commissioner. 15% increase in medical insurance is not a big increase, not compared to our historical increases in 30 and 35%. So it's big because recent history, the healthcare committee has done an excellent job of keeping costs flat.
This
by making plan design changes. Right.
Healthcare committee may look at that and say, "Oh, we want to keep our out of pocket cost, our payroll deductions lower. So the plan design changes, we're going to increase a copay or we're going to increase a deductible, and that might drop the increase down to, I'm just guessing, 10% or something like that. So."
About $100,000 a year difference to cost to the county, right?
$100,000 a year.
$12.8 million times divided by two, because you said about half of that, and the
about $12 million is the annual cost of health care.
Yeah.
15% increase would be $1.8 million on top of that, bringing it to $13.8 million for the year. What Francine is saying is, that's unmitigated, and we always do something to mitigate. So we don't know yet what the true cost increase is going to be until the health care committee has had their opportunity to slice and dice.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of what we need to budget going forward.
We've already budgeted going forward. So that there is a range that the health care committee will have to live with. We won't rebudget for health care until 17-18.
Okay, thank you.
So the 15% is across all insurance plans?
Yes.
Just medical?
Just regions.
Just regions. So what do we know? What do we know about Kaiser? So is the $12.8 million all insurance?
That's everything.
Plans?
That's both.
Okay. But this 15% is only on the regions.
That's correct. And Kaiser, it's a little too early for us to tell at this point with Kaiser. They don't provide the same frequency of releasing this kind of information to us because it's a fully insured plan. They own the data. They submit it to us when it fits their schedule. So we will get something hopefully in another month from them in terms of how our plan's running, and then we'll get information when we work on our renewals in the summer.
Typically, where has Kaiser been for increases percentage-wise? What range?
Oh, I've seen over time 3 to 10% as a range.
Have combined medical and dental?
No, they're rated separately. They're two different plans.
And that's because our employees can mix and match?
That's correct.
I see. Okay.
That mix and match question, that's where I was going. So the Regents, is it Regency or Regents?
Regents.
Regents versus Kaiser. Those are two elective plans that the employees can choose, this A or B.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
If we were to, and we were offering two because we're trying to be as compatible as we can with previous plans?
A public agency, we're actually required by the state of Washington to offer two different plans.
Okay. Well, I like it when we have very clear non-choices that are mandated by the state, because we don't have to make a decision there.
That's right.
Thank you.
Oh, when we get down to the Cadillac tax going into effect in 2018, so you're working on ways to mitigate that excise tax to reduce the impact on the county. The Cadillac tax is paid primarily by whom?
By the employer or through the health plan. So Kaiser would pay, and then they would build that into their rates to us the next year. But for our self-insured plan, that would be a direct cost to the county.
Okay. So
There's different ways we can reduce the impact of the excise tax on the organization. One is by plan design changes to bring the cost of the plan down, or the other way is to pass the cost on to the employees.
Okay, and how would that be done? Through increased financial participation?
It would be... could be determined that employees are going to cover all of that cost, and so it would become part of their payroll deduction. Could be rolled in as part of the rate, and then we share in the cost. So there's some different ways we could look at how we would have them help pay that excise tax.
Okay, I'm particularly interested because I believe there is an additional, when our employees file their personal income tax, if you have a Cadillac plan, I think the feds are talking about a penalty or tax surcharge or something.
Well, that's a little bit
different. Which is separate from whatever the county has to do.
Yes, and that's actually under a different provision of the Affordable Care Act. That's under the shared responsibility provision, which we're working on right now, and it requires us as an employer to monitor eligibility, because the feds are looking at a full-time employee for full-time benefits at 30 hours, and they're looking at eligibility a little bit different than we do. So we're looking at that, and we've developed reports to monitor how many hours people are working. But the secondary piece, getting the information to the federal government, is that in January of 2016, we have to file with the federal government all of our employees, actually, and covered dependents who are enrolled on our plans. So, and then we have to provide a statement to all of the employees, too. They have to include that information when they file their income tax.
My sarcastic comment for the day is, and we all know the federal government needs way more information on all of us. Okay. Aside from that, following this as it goes forward and keeping our employees abreast of how we're trying to work this out, because we don't want we want to, our employees need good health care. At the same time, we don't want to put them in a position that they're filing their personal income tax. A, they don't know if they have a Cadillac plan, and B, they're caught off guard with a surcharge. And for families or people on lower income, that can be devastating. So I know you know all that, but I just want to say how important I think it is too. Sure.
For an employer-sponsored plan, the individuals don't have to worry about the surcharge that you're referring to, because it's all taken into account in the employee benefit structure. And so if you're an individual that has your own insurance through the exchange, then that comes into effect. But because this is an employer-sponsored plan, individuals won't have to worry about the surcharge that you're referring to.
Okay, an income tax surcharge. Okay.
But what you may be talking about that's
it's
in effect
two
right
separate
now,
things, actually.
Yes, there's a penalty for not having insurance.
Yes.
So when you file your income tax, you have to say, yes, I have group coverage or I have coverage, period.
Is the coverage that the county offers its employees, does it fit the federal definition of Cadillac plan?
Yes, because the definition is based on a dollar threshold on how much you pay in premiums. And by 2018, we will exceed that threshold, and that's where a tax will come into effect.
But not to the employee. So will we be, if the county has to pay, will we be asking the employees to pay higher premium shares?
As it stands today, we would be at the 50-50 cost sharing of that. However, you know, we are opening up our contracts. We have a lot of discussions yet to be had on this issue. So,
and
this is kind of on our watch list.
Measures are still being thought through. So
absolutely.
I appreciate
this
all
is
that.
A big impact to us. It has a potential large impact in terms of cost. It's also, as you know, being discussed at the federal level to see where it lands. But we're looking at it from where is it today, that what are we required to do, and how do we address it based on what we know today, knowing it could change. But we need to look at how it is today and what we can do.
I know that you have been watching out for the employees for a longer time than I have. I just want you to know I'm on board.
So you mentioned the state requires we have two plans. Is it two plans or two providers?
Two plans, and one is like the Kaiser structure, and they're pretty specific about what kind of plans. So the Kaiser satisfies one of the requirements, and then having a plan like the Regents PPO, or we could have some other variation on that side, satisfies the other piece of the law, requiring two plans.
2018, if we have a Cadillac plan, we'll be have a new tax. So before we get there, we will be addressing that to where we don't have a Cadillac plan. And, of course, there's quite a bit mixed up to do that.
Addressing it, we'll see where we end up.
And that's when I come back in. Do we need two plans or two providers? And it'd be nice at some point that we have the option to go to Kaiser and say, or all three, and say, give me an RFP and what you can provide. And we looked at that amount to see where it falls to be under that Cadillac program, and we still be there. All right.
I've got some questions regarding the same. You mentioned the word crossing a threshold, where our benefits have exceeded a threshold that triggers an excise tax, in this case $750,000 annually, right? So the question is if we were to somehow get below that threshold, is that like an on-off switch? We exceed that by a dollar and we trigger $750,000 and
no.
We lower it, so there is some linear proportionality to it?
Yes, so the threshold for a single is $10,200 per year that can the cost of the plan. So we're projecting in 2018 that cost, our cost might be around $13,000. So we would pay the 40% on the difference between the $13,000 and the $10,200.
Is it within our discretion if to somehow look at that dollar difference from what would be not a Cadillac plan to put us over the Cadillac plan and say that is going above and beyond what the citizens typically enjoy for our area, and therefore to take that difference and share that equitably with our employees? In other words, rather than just simply offering something that's just Cadillac, which just in its communication, I think, is implied to say you've gone above and beyond. You've kind of like checked all the boxes and say, yeah, I want everything. And we're offering that, and we're the citizens are absorbing that cost, it sounds like. And I just want to, so I assume, since this is supposed to kick in 2018, that this was foreseeable. And we have, and the question is, do any of our contracts address this at all now? Or is this something that's going to be a new negotiable item for the going forward?
Francine mentioned our contracts are open, so they expire at the end of sometime this year. So we'll be going into negotiations, and we will be bringing up this issue about the Cadillac tax and how we're going to address it. Whether it means, you know, setting a standard for the healthcare committee that they need to operate under, or saying, putting in a reopener clause in the contract, you know, when we identify what the Cadillac tax impact is. So we are talking about different provisions and how we'll handle that with negotiations, and so that we're not impacted as significantly in 2018.
Is the Cadillac the highest, or is there a platinum and a gold?
Well, there is a Tesla plan.
There you go. Where are we in the spectrum?
Under the exchange, yes, they do have a platinum plan. They have a bronze, silver, gold, platinum. We're not the platinum level. So we're about at the gold level. So those are the different coverage levels that they offer through the exchange.
So there's
and
what?
Commissioner, the Cadillac tax has nothing to do with the benefits offered. It has to do with the price of the plan. So sheer inflation will push us into the Cadillac group if we change nothing.
That sounds like by design, whoever the
right.
architect.
So I mean, but you have to be clear that we're not moving into the Cadillac group because employees are somehow benefiting from a better, more dynamic plan here. They could, in fact, have fewer benefits as we move into the Cadillac group.
I'm glad you make that clear, because that was the way I was thinking.
Right. So the Cadillac tax will be imposed upon us potentially by sheer inflation of the cost of medical insurance.
And I would think that you would just simply add that cost onto the top of whatever it is, and the natural starting point in my thinking was that would be part of the share that we all would end up.
And Francine has indicated
that from the whatever percentage.
Yeah, well, Francine has indicated that the current plan would be that we will split that 50-50 okay. with the employees.
All right, that makes sense.
If we split that 50-50, we could still be involved or paying the tax on the if we exceed that amount. So my question is that the 50-50 sharing along the way may not address the issue as inflation kicks in. So I guess one of the other ways we can adjust that would be copay. So there'll be a basic, so we could just have a higher copay as it goes up. So we could bring the premium up so high, then to get underneath that mandated tax, we would say, okay, your copay is going to be 30.
And the way this works is they look at the total cost of the insurance plan. Not how much is the employer paying and how much is the employee paying. Hypothetically, if the employee was paying half and we were paying half, if that total cost still puts us over the threshold, it's not just our cost. It's all the costs together, which even if the employee is picking up a large portion, as long as the cost of the plan is that rich, we have to pay that Cadillac tax. Even if the employees are sharing half that cost.
We're going to start losing benefits.
That's the other potential outcome. And that's what a lot of places are talking about doing, is saying they want to reduce their level of benefits, which reduces the cost of the plan, in order to avoid that tax. That's certainly another strategy.
So
One more, as long as I got the speaker. Hang on. In our original thinking, as we went self-insured, somewhere down the way, we were talking about doing what others have done in the state, and that was to have a clinic on site. How far away are we from that?
I am reviewing a feasibility study that I'm going to have Mercer do and help us in evaluating the cost benefit of having an on-site clinic. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Potentially with other partners, potentially with other agencies that are really nearby who also express an interest in perhaps partnering with us if we move in that direction, which I think would help the cost-benefit analysis.
Appointment.
Oh, like all this isn't complicated enough. It's also possible that by 2018 or shortly thereafter, it's likely we're going to see modifications in the Affordable Care Act. So for all of our best planning, which we have to do by what's on the ground today and what we're anticipating will be here by 2018, it's also possible that things will change with different definitions, with different thrusts at the federal level, and then all of our planning will be replanned. But I'm glad to see that we're anticipating so that everybody can be protected as best as possible as we move forward.
Do we know what the federal government is supposed to be doing with that excise tax? Is that supposed to go to cover the people that don't pay?
You're getting it.
It's to help fund the exchanges, the people that are buying into the federal plans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've read a few pieces in the press recently about the Affordable Care Act, and they talk about a death spiral, how if you're young and healthy, economically, it makes more sense to pay the fine through the IRS tax process than it is to pay high premiums for a plan that has high deductible. And so as the healthy folks neglect to participate, the premiums for the others increase at 40%, 30%, whatever is necessary to keep the plan economically viable. And as the premiums go up, the next level of people drop out, and so it just continues to get worse. And then you have the Burwell case being heard by the Supreme Court regarding the 34 states that don't have state exchanges, where the feds came in and put in a federal exchange. That case involves whether or not the people of those states are eligible for subsidies. And the language of the law is pretty clear. It says they are not. And so if the Supreme Court rules that they are not eligible for subsidies, that's a pretty big plug to be pulling out of that that act. And it could have serious ramifications for it. Microphone, Mark.
Yep. So probably ought to just, I like definition and terms and make sure we term it correctly. This is really, the euphemism is, it really is the Unaffordable Care Act. Right? Unaffordable Insurance Act is more accurate. Okay. Thank you.
Oh, any more questions, counselors?
Well, it looks like the department, especially Kathy and Francine, thank you very much for going to bat. For going down this road. We were one of the few or the only counties in the state, one of two, that have gone down this self-insurance route, and right out the chute, saving $1 million a year. That's pretty significant. So well done. That was sounds like we're on the right track. Maybe others will follow. I am really curious though to see those trends, and
yeah, I was
going to
follow up
those.
Saying that we've identified some new metrics that we'll put together for you.
So the $1 million is we're anticipating it'll be $1 million in saving for 2015, or have we actually experienced in 2014 the $1 million savings?
When we went self-funded in April, we started avoiding those taxes. The reason
so
we're cautious on saying it, they're not true savings. I mean, we took that money and it's helped building our reserves. So they are real dollars that we didn't put out the door, but from a budget standpoint, they're not dollars we can spend because we're using them over here. So
April of 14 is
we started
when
you
started, and mm-hmm. that's why our report goes from April 14 to March of 15. Thank you.
Basically,
well,
yeah.
It's rolling 12 months. But when we do the 10 years, we'll do it annually.
Very informative. Thank you very much, Mr. County Manager.
Thank you, councilors.
Briefing.